This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
We're going into uncharted territory that are more analogous to some of the most disruptive events in Earth's history that cause massive warming and sometimes extinction events.
That is our first guest, Drew Crist, about new revelations. Greenland has been ice-free not long ago and could be going there again. Then super scientist Jessica Tierney explains why the worst scenarios for climate change may not happen. Real news, real science, and real climate right here on Radio EcoShock. Everything is changing so fast, but this may be the final straw for me. Even Greenland, frozen Greenland with ice a mile thick, is transitory. It comes and goes. In this second year of the pandemic, scientists discover Greenland was actually green with plants and not that long ago. Is this where this is going? The lead author of the new paper in PNAS is Andrew J. Crist, a Gunn postdoctoral fellow and lecturer in the Department of Geology at the University of Vermont. Andrew Crist, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks so much for having me.
There are more twists to this plot than a detective novel, really. We find out Greenland isn't stable. From a drilling core stored in various cold rooms traveling around the world for about 60 years, let's go to the beginning. Who dug up this sample of the real Greenland ground and why?
Okay, so we have to go back to a different time in history, back to the height of the Cold War. And in the 1960s, the most pressing issue for the U.S. military was the threat of nuclear strikes from the Soviet Union. And the most direct route for those nuclear strikes was across the Arctic. And so this caused a large military buildup in the high north, including in Greenland, because Greenland is a Danish territory and was part of NATO. So in the early 60s and late 50s, the U.S. military had built a radar station in northern Greenland. And then they decided that they wanted to learn more about the Greenland ice sheet and whether or not it was feasible for them to hide nuclear weapons inside the ice sheet. And to do this, they needed to study the ice itself and drill ice cores into the ice sheet. Scientists back in the early 60s, early climate scientists, realized that they could look at ice cores to reconstruct changes in past climate on Earth. And so the ice cores themselves back in the 60s were revolutionary for understanding Earth's climate. At the bottom of this ice core that they drilled, which is about a mile long, they recovered about 12 feet of frozen soil at the very bottom of it. And the main focus of those scientists at that time was the ice, not the soil. And so the soil didn't get studied as much. And then the soil was misplaced in freezers over the last 30 years and kind of forgotten about. And so initially it was stored at the University of Buffalo, and then it made its way over to University of Copenhagen in their large ice core storage facility. And a couple of years ago, the curator of that facility, J.P. Stephenson, who's a co-author on our study, was looking through their archives as they were preparing to move to a new facility and found these jars of frozen soil labeled Camp Century subice. And he realized that these were these long-lost samples from the first ice core. That is why how I enter the picture is this, you know, arc of a 60-year story that starts in the fear of nuclear war in the Arctic, and now we're learning about climate change from it.
Fantastic. So was there a particular moment when you realized that Greenland ground was exposed to sunlight not that long ago?
Yes. So after the core samples had been shipped from Copenhagen to the University of Vermont, we received them frozen in the lab, and we weren't expecting to, we knew this was going to be really important data no matter what, because it's so difficult to actually drill through ice sheets and collect soil underneath them. What we did not expect was when we were pulling apart the soil and processing it in our lab in a sink, my co-author and advisor, Paul Bierman, and I are looking at the rinse water in the sink, and we noticed these little black flecks floating around in the water. And Paul jokes around with me. He's like, oh, I wonder what that is. Just like get a pipette and suck it up and then put it under the microscope and see what it is. And then we saw fossil plants. We saw these freeze-dried plants that were from an ancient ecosystem. it was on Greenland. And that is the moment that was really exciting as a scientist, because we got to see leftover plant fossils from another time in the geologic past. But that's also the moment that we realize that the ice sheet must have been gone at some point to allow those plants to live and support basically Arctic tundra.
Well, in a 2019 paper, you and your colleague Paul Bierman published a paper titled "The Northwestern Greenland Ice Sheet During the Early Pleistocene Was Similar to Today." Would you modify that now?
That paper that we wrote is part of a, you know, like explaining the long-term history of the Greenland ice sheet. And I guess maybe would it be helpful if we went over like a little bit of just like the broadest geologic history of Greenland, at least in its ice sheet, and maybe that'll help put it in context.
I think so.
Okay. Earth's climate over the last 50 million years or so has been descending into colder and colder states. And around 7 million years ago, the climate had cooled enough for glaciers on Greenland to reach the ocean. So if you think of glaciers like you may have seen in Glacier Bay in Alaska, the ones that can calve icebergs off into a fjord, that started to happen in Greenland. Around 2.6 million years ago, those glaciers got big enough to cover the entire island of Greenland and form what we call an ice sheet, which is a continental-sized glacier. Beginning around 2.6 million years ago, that earlier paper we showed demonstrated that the ice sheet had been more or less present and had already significantly eroded the landscape. Now, what our new paper shows is that even though the ice sheet was there most of the time, there were periods of time where climate was warm enough that parts of it disappeared and potentially the whole thing. So as we, as humans, look towards a potentially much warmer future that could possibly melt the Greenland ice sheet as well as the Antarctic ice sheets, we want to understand what thresholds cause those ice sheets to melt and then raise sea level.
Absolutely. And you found Greenland must have experienced, quote, at least two ice-free warm periods in the past few million years. How could you know that?
We used several lines of evidence to figure that out. And the most obvious one is that when we pulled apart the core and found the plant fossils, that's just the most easily recognizable difference, because right now that part of Greenland is covered in almost a mile of ice. So that is a massive difference. That thick ice sheet had melted away and allowed a tundra ecosystem to live there. Now, the other thing that we did to figure that out is that we looked at the chemistry of the ice that was holding this soil together. And you can look at different forms of oxygen isotopes in water that tell you about past temperature and past elevation. The current elevation of that part of the Greenland ice sheet is around 1,900 meters. And we found results by looking at the oxygen composition of that ice that the elevation must have been much lower and a little bit, and the temperatures were a little bit warmer. So that's another line of evidence. The other way that we figured out, importantly, the timing is that we used a method that involves counting atoms that form when rocks and sediment on Earth's surface are exposed to radiation coming from outer space and through our atmosphere. And by counting those atoms, we can figure out how long ago something was buried beneath an ice sheet, for example. And that method told us that there must have been two different times in the past when this area was free of ice and exposed. Once maybe around 3 million years ago, and another time within the last million years. And then the last way that we figured this out was by using a method that determines the last time something was exposed to actual sunlight. And this method is pretty technical, but the way that you can think about it is that when something becomes buried below Earth's surface and it's no longer exposed to light, radiation, background radiation in soil and rocks, releases ionizing radiation into crystals, and those crystals fill up with really low levels of radiation. It's nothing dangerous, but it's measurable. And then scientists like my colleague Tammy Rittenauer at Utah State goes into a dark room, like a film photography lab, and slowly exposes those sediments to light, and you can measure how much radiation comes out when you basically bleach a sample with sunlight. And so that method is another way that we can tell how long ago something was buried beneath Earth's surface. And that's another way that we determined that the really old event was more than 1.4 million years ago, but less than 3 million years ago.
That's amazing stuff. How have we extended our senses into measuring light from a million years ago or more? It's just amazing that we can do that. I've been looking at a real map of Greenland as it would be without the ice, and the center of the continent is not land, but a massive body of water. If everything melts, would that be the world's largest lake or a new inland sea or what?
Yes, it is a little bit more complicated than that, because what you are looking at is if we just took the ice away immediately, what would actually happen is that the weight of that ice sheet is actually depressing Earth's crust into the upper part of the mantle, kind of like a Tempur-Pedic pillow. When you put your head down on a pillow, it depresses the pillow. But if you remove your head from the pillow, it starts to relax and come back to its original shape. So what we would actually have is, for a while, there would be inundation from the ocean into those low elevation parts. But over time, the Earth's crust would actually raise up and it would become above sea level. That same process has been happening in the Hudson Bay of Canada for the last 10,000 years. It is slowly raising up over time as the crust relaxes from that weight of the ice. But the other big elephant in the room is that you have now melted this massive ice sheet, a frozen store of water, and that will mean that sea level elsewhere around the world is going to be much higher.
I know that the same thing is sort of happening in New England, where glacial memory is causing New England to slowly sink, and sea level rise will seem more pronounced there because of that. So looking back within the last million years, do we know what was growing on Greenland?
Well, that's a really interesting question, because one of the limitations has been that we have this giant ice cap on Greenland, and so it's really hard to find places on Greenland where we have a record of past vegetation, because it's covered in this impenetrable ice. And so these ice cores are really the only way that we can actually get to the bottom of the ice sheet and possibly recover what used to live there. And so about 10 years ago now, over 10 years ago, there is a study from another ice core in southern Greenland called Dye 3. And at the bottom of Dye 3, they recovered ice that was dirty. So it was mostly ice, but it had some silt and sand in it. And it also contained DNA from an ancient forest that used to live in that part of Greenland within the last million years, which was really mind-blowing when that study came out. And then our study, you know, in the northwestern part of Greenland, much further north, we have direct fossil evidence of a tundra ecosystem that used to live there. And so what you might imagine it looks like if you were to go to the high northern parts of Canada today, and you see a landscape covered by small Arctic willows and maybe some small shrubs with ponds dotted across the landscape. And that would be what Greenland probably looked like the last time our study site was free of ice. But there could have been times, and we know there were times in the last million years, where southern Greenland likely had large boreal forests like in subarctic Canada that covered the landscape. And that's important to know, because not only will the disappearance of the Greenland ice sheet cause sea level to rise, what grows on Greenland is then going to have a feedback effect or an added-on effect to the global carbon cycle. It changes how much radiation is absorbed from the sun by different types of plants, and that affects the entire global climate system. And it affects how much carbon is exchanged between the ecosystem biosphere and the atmosphere. So understanding what lived on Greenland in the past is not just helpful for thinking about sea level, but it's also important for understanding what our future world could be like if we remove an ice sheet and then have new ecosystems emerge in those areas.
And maybe we could get up there and get some more oil and gas.
That, I know, it's that. I hope that that does not become part of the future, because the other thing about Greenland is that it's an extremely old landmass that has been assembled through many, many different continental collisions through geologic time. And those continental collisions have produced a lot of mineral wealth. And so there is a lot of mining activity that could happen on Greenland, as well as there's some recent studies about mining sand that actually comes from the glaciers themselves, because the glaciers churn up the landscape and produce sand. And behind water, sand is actually one of the most valuable and sought-after materials on the planet, because we use it in everything. For everything that we build involves sand. So it will be interesting to see what happens up there.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Our guest is Drew Crist. And we're talking about the Greenland ice sheet and the fact that it has disappeared within the last million years. Why in the new PNAS paper do you say the ice sheet was gone within the last million years? Cannot we match this up with other data and get more specific, say the last warming period 125,000 years ago? Why can't we pinpoint it yet?
We have narrowed it down to within the last million years based on the current data we have. We have new data that we have not published yet, and I can't comment on specifically, but we are able to narrow this down a bit. Understanding what happened to ice sheets in the past using geologic history, to me, is like going into a library where a bunch of books have been thrown on the ground and then had all the pages ripped out of them. You can read all those pages and start to tell a story. And if you don't know the page number, you can't put that story in order. And so by each additional study that is done on reconstructing climate in the past, we're able to put a page number on that story. And that helps us tell everything together. In that way, our study we can use to narrow it down and then use other research that's been done using similar methods by counting atoms that form in rocks and sediment exposed to radiation from outer space. And that shows the exact same answer of the ice sheet being gone in the last million years, which is really striking because that study is from the very center of the Greenland ice sheet. That to us, that must mean most of the ice sheet has disappeared. There's also records from sediment that accumulates out in the middle of the deep ocean. And there are many, many different ways that you can reconstruct what climate was like using those archives. You can look at what type of pollen that has been sent airborne and then lands in the ocean. It tells you about what was living on land at that time. And so there is pollen evidence from sediment out in the deep ocean that also shows that there were probably multiple times in the last million years that parts of Greenland were much more green than they are today, and that the ice sheet was possibly smaller. But what our study does that is different than that is that it is actually from the Greenland landmass. It's direct evidence. And so it gives us a firm footing on what that part of Greenland was like in the last million years. And that's really what is the advance that this study provides.
If Greenland can shed its ice, and that would rewrite global coastlines and all the maps of the world, do we have any idea how fast this could happen?
And that is a really intense area of study for climate modelers. Climate modelers are people who use computer models that are complex series of numerical equations to understand how the ice sheet would respond to different warming scenarios under different levels of greenhouse gas emissions to the atmosphere. There's a range of predicted retreats of the Greenland ice sheet. But there's one study from a couple of years ago in the journal Science Advances that showed that if we as humans continue to release carbon dioxide into the atmosphere at an uncontrolled rate, that the entire Greenland ice sheet, which contains over 7 meters of sea level rise equivalent, so over 20 feet, could be gone in the next 1,000 years. I know that you and I will be long gone but by the time 1,000 years rolls away, but what is important to think about is the path to that. So in the next 80 years, even like a few feet of sea level rise from Greenland, as well as parts of Antarctica, would be really, really devastating to our coastal regions. And we're already seeing the impact of sea level rise on multiple parts of our society. The most direct example of this is in the low-lying island nations of the South Pacific. Many of these nations are being forced out of their historic homes because their islands are literally being swallowed by the sea, and the little amount of groundwater that they have to drink is being salinized by the encroachment of seawater into their aquifers, those people are going to have to leave their homes. And that will, that climate migration and refugee movement is going to be an issue. On top of that, closer to home in the U.S., we see regular flooding of parts of Miami without even storms. There's water bubbling up through the sewer drains there that they have to spend a lot of money to pump back out into the ocean. We see in coastal storms like large hurricanes that sea level rise has exaggerated the impact of storm surge, like during Hurricane Sandy in 2012 that inundated the southern part of Manhattan. And even king tides, which are the highest annual tide of the year, that the added effect of sea level rise causes more coastal flooding. So I lived in Boston for 5 years, and there's a part of the seaport area of Boston that will regularly flood during king tides now. And that didn't used to be how it was. And so all of these impacts have large societal costs, economic costs. They will have political implications. And these are things that we need to really pay attention to, because the coastline determines so much about where humans live and how we behave and who we are as a species.
So sometime in the last million years, Greenland emerged from its ice cover. Obviously, that was a natural event. It wasn't due to humans burning fossil fuels. Do we know what caused such a massive change?
What we are thinking caused this in the past is that there were periods of time in the last million years when Earth's climate was warm enough for a long enough period of time to melt away the whole ice sheet. And so one thing that I should explain is the general history of Earth's climate in the last million years. In the last million years, our climate has fluctuated in these 100,000-year cycles that are determined by the shape of Earth's orbit around the sun. And that kind of paces how our climate behaves. And so every 100,000 years or so, our climate shifts into a warmer period of climate where the ice sheets that cover the northern hemisphere mostly melt away and raise sea level. There are periods of time in the last million years where those warm periods, which typically last about 10,000 years, may have been a little bit longer or a little bit warmer than they are right now. That combination of warm temperatures plus time led to the Greenland ice sheet melting significantly. There's one period of time about 400,000 years ago where we think that large portions of Greenland and possibly parts of Antarctica melted away and raised sea level up to 13 meters higher than present, so that's almost 40 feet. That's one potential candidate for when this happened. So how does that relate to modern climate change? You know, that would be a process that takes thousands of years to melt away the ice sheet. We are looking at a problem where we are melting away potentially these ice sheets in hundreds of years. So that's going to have near-term effects on us and our society. And that's why this is important to understand the natural history versus the human impact.
Once this process starts, do you think it's reversible?
I don't know. I think that there are some elements of our climate system, particularly not in Antarctica, not Greenland, where retreat of the ice sheet could become irreversible. The Greenland ice sheet is sensitive to atmospheric temperature changes more than the Antarctic ice sheet. The Antarctic ice sheet, specifically West Antarctica, is really sensitive to changes in ocean temperature and the ocean shifts in ocean currents caused by shifts in the atmosphere. And that melting of the underside of the Antarctic ice sheet could actually result in an irreversible retreat of that ice sheet. And that is really the scary implication of climate change for the ice sheets, is which ice sheets are going to start melting and will they stop? And so geologists who have worked in Antarctica also are really interested in understanding that record in the past as well.
We have had a flurry of scientific papers and press releases about the weakening of the North Atlantic current that keeps New England reasonably warm and certainly the UK and Northern Europe habitable. It's called AMOC. It may change, and we believe that's because of freshwater coming off Greenland. Does your study have anything to say about that?
The North Atlantic current, or the Gulf Stream, is, as you say, very important for how for keeping parts of the Northern Hemisphere habitable, but it also controls how heat is distributed throughout the ocean. Our study has not, we have not explored the direct implications on the AMOC yet, and that is probably something that as we move along forward that we would do. So I can't comment too much on it, but that we'll see in the future once we get better answers.
Well, Bush's Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld started talking about known unknowns. Given this startling discovery about the fragility of the mighty Greenland glaciers, Drew, how would you prioritize what we need to know?
Oh, that's a great question. I'll just say as a geologist, and so focusing on just what I do, is the thing that we really need to figure out is the exact timing when the ice sheet disappeared in the past, because that exact timing gives us a frame of reference from other geologic evidence of what Earth's climate was like. And that begins to narrow the story, and we can be more confident in what caused the ice sheet to melt away in the past. That, for me, in my research, is the known unknown that I want to figure out, is when was the ice gone in the past? And I guess more broadly, understanding what the rest of the world was like during these periods when the ice sheets were smaller or gone, and thinking about what impact that had on the total climate system. Those are the things that we need to think about at a scholarly level.
You know, I talked to a lot of good scientists on this program, and we learned some frightening risks about the future. But for some reason, your study felt more, well, particularly destabilizing to me, because it's something that I've always counted on. Greenland, ice, mile thick, what could change? So after the thrill of making this discovery, did you also feel a kind of danger revealed in this news?
Yes. The day that we found the fossils was really exciting. And when we first saw them, the first question that we asked was like, well, how old is this stuff? We didn't know if this was 3 million years old or a million years old or even older than that, because it could have been. And so when we started producing the data that told us that it was less than a million years old, it was the day before we had this meeting at the University of Vermont with all the scientists who worked on this project together, and we had just gotten the data back from the particle accelerator that produced the data that told us it was less than a million years old. And I remember being in my office and just like double checking these numbers, being like, okay, this is confirming a hypothesis that the ice sheet has disappeared in the last million years, and we have really direct evidence of it, and we have the fossils of what was living on the landscape at that time. It's one of those moments where you realize just how sensitive our planet is to relatively minor changes. It's really, really hard for humans alive today to contextualize just how quickly we are changing the planet. But we are doing things in decades that used to take hundreds of thousands of years to occur. And so we are causing a shock to the system that we don't fully understand. And I think that's something that we need to really think about as humans, is what we are doing right now, because it's, as a geologist, we're going into uncharted territory that are more analogous to some of the most disruptive events in Earth's history that cause massive warming and sometimes extinction events. That's the worst possible case scenario. And I don't think that's a foregone conclusion, but you have to appreciate the history of the Earth and contextualize just how much we are changing the natural system right now.
We have been speaking with geomorphologist and climate scientist Dr. Andrew J. Crist. He led the new paper, and the title of it is A Multi-Million-Year-Old Record of Greenland Vegetation and Glacial History Preserved in Sediment Beneath 1.4 Kilometers of Ice at Camp Century. And that was just published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Find links to follow up in my blog at ecoshock.org. Thank you so much for sharing this with us, Drew. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for your thoughtful questions. Really appreciate it.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.